And away we go with hour two here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. How you doing, everybody? 7:07, JR Simmer and Hammer with you here on TSN 1200. We're waking up to a nice sunny day, although a little chilly, minus two right now. We're going to get up to 7 degrees later on. Doesn't look like the double-digit temperatures now. It's promised Saturday. Now it's looking like maybe Sunday. But once they come, it's looking like we'll be into a trend of double digits for a few days into next week, which will be very nice. I know my wife with her broken ankle trying to get outside is like, can you go downstairs and get one of the deck chairs out so I could sit outside on the front stoop a little bit?
Watch and you people. Did that for her, right?
Not promptly, but I did get it. She asked me first Sunday. And then it was Monday. And then yesterday, she caught me in a moment of weakness yesterday afternoon when I got home, and I actually did go down and do it. So, because I'm of the mindset, like many people are, why do today what you can put off till tomorrow, even when there's nothing to do, which is what we're all doing right now, nothing to do.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. And hopefully healing along. And you're right, just a little bit of sunshine, right? After a long winter, no matter what the circumstance is, we kind of come out. And even if it's a bit on the cool side, that sun feels awfully good. And based on the circumstances right now, even yesterday afternoon as we got up to about a high of 8 or 9, just felt absolutely incredible.
We went for a monster walk yesterday, the family, and I discovered how to quicken the pace of the slow pokes, because my daughter and my youngest are slow pokes, and my youngest is the after maybe 500 meters.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad, how about a piggyback ride over here? How about I get up on those broad shoulders
of
yours?
This is the 44-pound defensive tackle for the Nepean Eagles minor football team?
Yes, and he wants me to carry him around.
Yep.
Here you go, rollerblades.
You're fairly easy to mount, though, so that's probably helpful for the kids.
Is that a height joke, Simmer?
No, you're mountable. I mean, it's
okay.
A problem.
You start hour six by deflecting blame that was deserved on JR to me about the delaying of the start of the show, and now a short joke to start hour two.
Hey, the shoe fits, man. The shoe fits.
It does, but rollerblades, and then we went for a nice 3.5-kilometer walk. It was beautiful.
Solid.
Beautiful.
That's very good.
And no complaining, too, so that was nice.
Yeah. Now, what was the reaction when you broke the news, or did they already know it about now school being out until the 4th of May is the latest now?
They're always the first ones to know because it travels through. If we don't get to them first, another buddy's parents have gotten to them, so then it's just on the old Instagram into their group chat. But they're doing schoolwork at home, so we've got them doing some stuff. The teachers are doing a great job of sending some daily emails and saying, hey, try this. Do this little project.
Yeah.
So my daughter had to do some project of a country that you wanted to visit, and then make a brochure about it. Do some research, make a brochure.
What did she choose?
She chose Russia.
Oh, nice.
Wow. You talk to Simmer. Hey?
Oh, you got to get me on there. Now I'm going to send you over Happy People, Life on the Taiga. And every dynamic, and it must be so different from house to house. With Mira's two boys, it was last weekend, they were actually, and the older boy was almost in tears because he had forgotten a plan that he had made at school, how he was going to do all this math. And he was basically going to go do, I think, grade 7 and 8 math over the summer. And he was so upset that he didn't have it. I said, what is wrong with kids these days? my celebration meter of the fact that I wasn't having to go to school and that it may be canceled, like, boy, oh boy, things have really changed. And it was pretty cool, actually, to see how motivated they were to do the homework. And as the Hammer pointed out, the ability to interact and to track kids now is also pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. They did announce yesterday. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, but it's an unfortunate part is that not everyone, we think we're a wired world, and we are, but not everybody has a home computer. I think that's a huge part. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of families that just can't afford it for whatever reason, that they are going to try to attempt to get at least one computer into the houses of every single person. So every single kid, at least, to make sure that they have the ability to learn online, which is the only thing that's going on right now.
Fantastic if they can make that happen.
Yep.
Because it's just nice for the kids to have that little piece. I know they probably don't think they want it or need it, but deep down, I think they understand. They kind of like that hour where they sit down and do some reading and do some schoolwork through the Google Classroom.
Yeah, just the ability to interact, right? We're all being told to stay inside. And I say to this, my kids are a little bit older, but I'm like, okay,
So you think right now by having to stay home that this is a great hardship. I said, imagine this happening 20 years ago or 25, whatever, when we didn't have the internet or not everybody had a computer or nothing, or you didn't have FaceTime and all that. Like, your ability to interconnect with all of your friends and anybody else you want to at the drop of a hat for hours on end to keep yourself occupied. Compare that to as little as 10 and, well, even, you know, like FaceTime's only been around for, what, 10 years at the most, if that? Whatever,
if
whatever
that,
it is.
I would say maybe 5.
Right? Yeah. You know, all of that, the ability for people, all people to, you know, in Facebook, like anything, your ability to interconnect with people, I think for a lot of people has been a lifeline.
It is, and you look at some of the elderly or people, and there's birthdays and things that come along, the ability to have the video chats, I think makes people feel at least a little better. Had the old phone call, but I can remember back in the day, when you would finish the school year, the majority of the kids, depending on summer camp, sports, where people were going, or if you had a cottage, you wouldn't see anybody from the end of school till basically the start of school the next fall, right? Like there was no communication. It was almost like, hey, are we still friends? You know, when you'd see each other on the first day of school, you'd have to reacquaint with your group. So, yeah. No, that certainly changed the world for sure.
All right, 7:13, lots of fun. Hope you enjoyed. Boy, that was a long game we had for you last night. Our, fourth installment of our best 10 of the last 10, the best 10 Sens games of the last decade. Edition number 4 last night was the double overtime game between the Sens and the Pens from the 2013 playoffs, featuring a last-minute shorthanded goal by Daniel Alfredsson to tie the game 1-1 on, and I'd forgotten, Thomas Vokoun was the Pittsburgh goaltender back for that playoff series, and then the double overtime game winner, which must have come out of nowhere because it took Dean and Gord about 2 minutes after the goal was scored by Colin Greening to actually identify Colin Greening as the guy. That's how it was kind of a broken play. And yeah, Colin Greening ends up, the strangest thing, I'm listening to the game on the radio last night, and Stuntman Stu, who was the in-house announcer at that moment in time, they go to the live announcement of the double overtime winner, and the fans are cheering wildly, and it sounds great. And it's, okay, it's Colin Greening. The assists on a double overtime playoff winner from Colin Greening, who is obscure enough, go to Andre Benoit and Eric Condra. That was your scoring play, Greening from Benoit and Condra, for that game-winning double overtime goal from 2013.
You know what? Going along with the theme of this show, it's my fault that Dean and Gord took so long to say Colin Greening, because I should have passed along the message that it was Colin Greening. They probably got caught up in the excitement, and as the producer there, it's on me. Not on Dean and Gord.
Okay.
So I apologize
for that, everybody. I like that.
No, it is. And you go through the names. I love that, going through hockey database, looking at different rosters. And when I think about Colin Greening, I realistically think of that magical year that, what, McCulloch had 40? Spets had a monster year. He's on that right wing. And I believe led to basically, what, a six-year contract that Greening ended up signing? Whatever
it is. Was it that long?
Well, now? Maybe it was, but whatever it was, right? I mean, he was the right guy in the right spot. Very simple player. Everybody always raved about his fitness. Certainly a high IQ off the ice. Unfortunately, on the ice, and no fault of his. I mean, what a great pro. The process into the game was never there, but at least for that year, and I think McCulloch and Spezza both played in the All-Star game that year, Greening finding the right spot on the right side as your old-school power forward. Just get to the crease, and you're going to score a few goals.
Speaking of Eric Condra, it was great. He caught up with Ian and Leon in the box yesterday, so that was great. He, of course, a part of that playoff series, but then the Hamburglar run as well. So he shared some memories there. Jared Cowan was on yesterday as well, which was neat. If you missed any of the interviews, you can find them online at tsn1200.ca. Ian passed along the message that today they're kind of flipping it on its ear a little bit. They're going to try to connect with some, he's calling them Senator villains from over the years, some players from other teams that Sens fans aren't necessarily or don't necessarily have fond memories of. So edition number one goes today at 4:30. Jeff Friesen, the guy who scored the game-winning goal in the dying minutes of Game 7 in the 2003 series versus New Jersey, the conference final. Jeff Friesen will be on the show today to kick off the Sens villain. So who else, and maybe some people out there can help us out with some suggestions. If you think of guys over the years, and whether it's scored dagger goals like Jeff Friesen did, or guys that just made significant plays, or guys that were just
dominated them.
There's a long list of Toronto Maple Leaf players, starting with probably what, Gary Roberts?
Yes.
Goes right to the top of the list.
Joe Nieuwendyk, you think of?
Alan McCauley.
Yeah, Hammer may have the ability
Tucker,
to get.
Darcy
Hammer,
Tucker.
You're going to get close friend Matt Cook on the show.
Oh, yeah.
I would assume Cookie's on a short list.
Well, Matt, so again, I'm listening to the game last night, third period. So the reason that Alfie, the Sens are shorthanded in the last 2 minutes is that Erik Karlsson, you forget about all this, Erik Karlsson is the guy in the penalty box. Because he took a penalty on Matt Cook
in the last two minutes
of a one-goal game the Sens are playing. And then Matt Cook drew another penalty on the Sens in overtime. I don't remember who took it. Like, Matt there is your all-time villain right there.
Absolutely.
All-time?
Yeah. I mean, villain to the point of I don't even know if there would be a reaction to have him on, right? Like, he is in that. Is he not in that zone? And also to Friesen when we had Brandon Press on the other day. How this relates to Friesen, because the year he scored the winning goal, they went on to win the cup, did they not? Did they win that year?
Yep.
So did he see this as a big goal in his career? Oh, I'm sure he did. But his memory and where he parks at and the fact that they went on to win the Stanley Cup, do you know what I mean? Like with Brandon Press, the realization now, a little different of his thought of the series against Ottawa and not even remembering there was a line brawl going on before his very eyes. So each player sees a little bit different or where they, what compartment they put it in.
Yeah. Matt Cook, of course, with the slice of Erik Karlsson's Achilles as well to add to the mix. So, yeah, it'll be fun to catch up and hear from Jeff Friesen. But, yeah, I would put... There's any number of Toronto Maple Leafs on that board. You think back to some early playoff series in which they lost to like the likes of the Buffalo Sabres. Was it Miro Chatan, I think, had an overtime winner way back in the day, I want to say, in 1999 or was it 99 or 2000? Whatever year they played the Buffalo Sabres. That was the first year they finished either first or second in the conference and then ended up getting swept in the first round of the playoffs by Buffalo of all teams. I think it was Chatan that got a game winner there. So there's been a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of heartbreakers over the years against the Sens.
Yeah, but also an opportunity to, I think, for people to reflect, to have some fun with some of the things. And as far as Matt Cook goes, I think it's kind of interesting too, because would you agree that that hit on Mark Savard, to me, was kind of the turning point for the National Hockey League? It felt like where all of a sudden the headshots and the predatory behavior started to take on a different... things felt like they've turned and turned for the positive since that nasty hit that basically ended Mark Savard's career.
Yeah. All right. So we'll look forward to that. And again, if you have any suggestions, we'll pass along to the boys of maybe some people you'd like to, or actually, if you put it this way, these are the guys we don't want to hear from. Those would be the guys we pass along because, quite frankly, they're the worst of the worst. All right, so we'll take a break at 7:20. When we come back, talk a little bit about the NFL deciding to follow through. They're going to expand their playoffs. What do you think about the NHL? Too many, too few, just right in terms of playoff teams. 16 out of 31 teams, soon to be 32. NBA, 16 out of 30. Major League Baseball, just 10 out of 30. Like, should there be more? Should there be less? Are we going to see a change, when and if these seasons that were delayed right now resume? I mean, this season's kind of a strange one and a special one in its own way, but will that be the kickoff to maybe an overall change we're going to see in terms of the way professional sports handle their playoffs? So we'll get into that discussion. We're going to talk some free agent goalies as well. We'll celebrate this day in sports history and some hockey birthdays as well. Pierre McGuire will be by. We're going to talk to Brad Berry, the head coach of Shane Pinto, Jacob Bernard Docker, and Johnny Tyconic this past year at the University of North Dakota. He will join us on the show after 9, and we'll talk some football with Henry Burris as well. The Grey Cup champion, the former Ottawa Red Black, will join us right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200 at 7:26 in the morning. Let's hold off till a little later on today before we get into that. All right. We mentioned that the NFL owners announced voted yesterday via conference call that they are indeed going to expand the playoffs for this coming NFL season. So it will be an extra playoff team in each of the two conferences. So as opposed to having two teams get a bye and then the next four teams would play off in the wildcard weekend, now just the one team gets a bye and the second team no longer gets a bye. It would face the new playoff team, as it were, the extra playoff team. And so we would have not two wildcard games each of the 2 days on the wildcard weekend, but three. and just lay me down and inject me with some NFL wildcard weekend football. Because, as you said, Zimmer, in hour one, January 9th and 10th, just put a big old X through those 2 days, everybody. We are going to get back to normal at some point. We are going to have sports again, whether there's fans in the stands or not. There you go. There's your full weekend. I know it's, 9 months away or 8 months away or whatever it is. Yeah. But there you go. Your January 9, 10 is all set with wall-to-wall football.
Yeah, and thank God. Think about the month of January getting to the new year for a lot of people. Not a whole lot of fun. We're locked in the middle of the winter. I think for the National Football League, always feels like they get it right. I think some of the regular season, as you get down the stretch and depending where your team's sitting, not always the most exciting, but most of it is meaningful. And certainly as far as the playoffs and expanding of it, I think they did it perfectly and can't wait.
All right. So the NFL now sitting at with the two additional playoff teams has 14 teams make the playoffs. So they are, of course, a 32-team league. Just to compare to the rest of professional North American sports, if we're talking, Canadian, U.S., you know, CFL obviously is, 6 out of 9?
Yeah.
But MLB is now, if we include the wild card play-in game, is 10 out of 30. NBA is 16 out of 30. And the NHL is 16 of 31. And, of course, with Seattle joining next year, will be 16 of 32. Do you think that having essentially, as the NBA and the NHL do right now, having about half of your teams make the playoffs or thereabouts, is that the right number? Too much? Too few? Just right?
You know what? Would I prefer it a little bit less or expand it? I guess I can look at different things, but we almost have to break down each of the leagues and understand, hey, with football, it's great that all the teams make the playoffs or X amount. We're also talking about a one and done. And when I talk about baseball, and to me they're in the dark ages, they're probably the sport that needs the expansion of playoffs even more, but they're playing 162 games. The NHL, as it relates, and the 16 used to be 16 out of 21. And you talk about complaining back in the day with the old Norris division. I like the way it is. The only critique I would make to the NHL playoffs, I would keep everything interdivisional, and I would have 4 play 5 in a one-game play-in. That would be my only critique. But as far as half of the teams making it, it's very important for business, and I have no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a change that we see the more I think about it. And again, who knows how this season is going to finish off, and whether they can get on the ice first of all, and if they can, whether they want to just go with the top 8 teams in each conference and start from there, or whether they want to have play-in games. Throwing this season aside, when we get back to quote normal, maybe for next season, I think we're definitely going to see play-in games. It just makes too much sense from too many different levels. You want to get people fired up about your game and to start a long playoff grind. I think having essentially what is a one and done to start your playoffs, let alone for a lot of people, the first round of the playoffs is the most exciting in the NHL. Their interest starts to dwindle the longer that it goes on, to the point of if your team's not playing in the Stanley Cup final, your favorite team or a team you hate, your interest level really tends to drop off by the time we roll around to the month of June. Like you might, last year, for instance, like a game 7, I'm sure that Boston-St. Louis series, a lot of people were interested because it's Game 7. It's for all the marbles. Sure. Somebody's winning the Stanley Cup that night, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're talking about Games 1 and 2 of a final into the first week of June when you've been watching hockey for 6 straight weeks at that point, I think that starts to wear a little bit. So I think any way you can create even more excitement, I think the NHL is going to look at that.
Yeah, and you look at a schedule, you have the entire National Hockey League finish off on a Saturday night. You have a couple of the play-in games or whatever it is on Monday to Tuesday, and then you open up Wednesday, and that's how you'd end up doing your spacing. And you're right, for the National Hockey League, it will always be, and in the United States, if it's Chicago or the Rangers, does it help? It's a regional sport, and I actually think the matchup of Boston and St. Louis, and as it relates to here with an old original six team and Bruce Cassidy and some of the St. Louis storyline, was a real good one. But I go back to when the New Jersey Devils are playing against the LA Kings in the middle of June. You couldn't pay me to sit down and watch those. So certainly a big part of the matchups, but it's not like the NBA where you're able to sell on a national level. It is a regional sport, and I agree. I think a play-in would be a lot of fun.
All right. So with the expansion of the NFL playoffs, the other interesting aspect of that will most certainly be the race to get the number one seed in each of the two conferences. I read the stat last night. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But in terms of teams that get to and win the Super Bowl, how many of them had a first-round bye in the playoffs, it's pretty much straight through.
Yeah.
We have the occasional time, right? The New York Giants were the one team that came out of the wild. In fact, didn't even have a home game, right? They were on the road for wild card weekend, mm-hmm. won on the road throughout their conference playoffs, and then won the Super Bowl. That's a rarity. For the most part, most of the teams that get to the Super Bowl, let alone win it, are teams that had a bye in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and that example that year was incredible. They rolled the table on three tough road games and beat the Patriots, the unbeaten team. And look back to last year. Patriots lose, the final weekend? Not able to get the bye, and they squeak through, and then they end up losing to Tennessee. They quite simply ran out of gas. They needed, and they weren't that great last year, but I think that was a difference. That basically sealed their fate by not having the bye week.
All right, we'll take a break. 7:32. Welcome your feedback on anything we chat about at 12-1200. That's how you text us. Standard messaging rate supply. You can tweet at us at TSN1200. Phone line's always open for you at 750-1200. When we come back, we'll celebrate this day in sports history. Some interesting notes on this first day of April. We'll celebrate some hockey birthdays as well. Pierre McGuire is standing by. Can take your questions as well. You can text those to us as well at 12-1200. Any hockey questions for Pierre? He'll join us after 8. Brad Berry, we mentioned the birthday boy. After 9 o'clock, we'll talk some Sens prospects with him and Henry Burris to talk some football and the expanded NFL playoffs and all the other storylines with Hank coming up at about 8:45 as we power through this Wednesday morning. Hope you're having a great start to it. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
Point,
that's
eh?
True.
The
yeah.
light on the phone, which yeah. is the brightest light that has ever been made by mankind.
Yeah.
Eh?
And then the best part is then people who forget to turn it off and then they run their battery down because it only lasts for 5 minutes anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Welcome back to the show, everybody. 7:39. I want to give a shout out. Got an email yesterday from a listener by the name of Phil who listens online, so listens to the podcast. And he's like, you guys are always referring to now because we're playing a little more music, especially contemporary music. On the show these days, he's like, "Hey, can you put the music on the podcast?" And I said, "It's unfortunately it's a copyright issue with the music. That's the reason we don't include the music on the podcast." But it was interesting because Phil was writing us. I think he's from Ottawa. Didn't fill in a lot of details.
Yeah,
he's living in southern Sudan in Africa.
Wow.
So I just found that to be and then also listens live as well. I'm maybe listening right now, for all I know, on the iHeartRadio app around the world. So shout out to Phil and everybody that's listening here, there, and everywhere. Shoot us a text, by the way.
Yeah.
If you are somewhere really, I would say southern Sudan would be fairly obscure. I don't know that we have a lot of southern Sudanese listeners.
No, and they're in the dry season right now as well. So
yeah. What, both in terms of water and drinking, or what?
Yeah, that's all I ever think of when I think of Sudan is the dry season and the water and the animals and everybody coming together.
Yeah, indeed. So text us wherever you're listening around the world to us at 7:40 here on a Wednesday morning. We're going to get into the NHL PA player poll, kind of some interesting results of that came out yesterday. But Simmer, you got a text from somebody involved in the league yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, all of this is conjecture as far as when things are going to start. But as far as the NHL is concerned, they are still talking at the league level, and again, this is a person you can't name, a person who's in the know, who they're still bound and determined to finish the regular season with the NHL, if and when at some point we get the all clear.
Yeah, very much so, and on a few levels. First of all, the idea to get some games in, to level a playing field for the non-playoff teams, give an opportunity to the Rangers and to the Islanders, Minnesota and Vancouver, I think on the Western Conference on the outside looking in. But just from a financial standpoint, when you look at teams with 4 and 5 home games left, what does that look like from a gate standpoint as far as loss of revenue, to having to pay the players, to also some of the broadcasting rights to kind of tee up the playoffs. So, hey, you have to have all these things in place, and why wouldn't you? And this is when the discussions are made, gets me thinking about the Ottawa Senators, and if you carted the team back, and I know it's probably not feasible because you're going to have to pay everybody the rest of the year, but I would look at that and say to myself, well, for a season that was stolen away in Belleville for the great run, how good would the Bathursons and the Norrises and the Brandstroms and a number of the other kids look in finishing the year here, playing the final 11 games if you played it, and kind of teeing you up to the following fall as they may be on your team? So that's at least something that they're still throwing around,
right?
And I think would still like to accomplish if they could.
Would you have any concerns? I mean, you're talking about some of your best prospects, all of whom have now gone home for the last, 3 weeks, and who knows? I mean, no access to any team facilities, so you have no idea who's trying to stay in shape at this point, who has the ability to stay in shape beyond going for a run and maybe lifting you know, a couple of weights they might have in the basement. Yeah. Any concerns about putting your best prospects at risk coming back to play in a handful of games when they may not be in the best of shape?
Well, it could be. I think you have to look at any of this. I'd even look at it from both a player standpoint, and we see guys in the past that are either restricted or unrestricted free agents, don't want to go play at the World Championships. If you're the Ottawa Senators or the player, if you're somebody, you know, I'll use Brown as an example, you know, and you kind of look at this, where you're going as a player, if you want to sign a contract extension, how much risk do you also want to go into coming back at that point as well? So I think you'd have to look at everything. And then people said, well, what we do with the rosters? Well, you know, for teams, think about teams when the playoffs start and the American League's over, they basically are carrying 30 players. Now, they're not paying them. But I think you have to look at everything and say, hey, we do not want to put any athlete at any point in their career in a vulnerable spot for injury.
Right. So at this point, NHL teams can't have any more than, 23 players on the roster.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're suggesting that maybe they'll throw that out and just say, hey, you can have as many players as you want?
Well, come playoff time, there is no limit.
Right.
I mean,
but I'm talking about for this end of the regular season games.
I don't know. I just was trying again. Well, first of all, if I'm an NHL team and I'm prepping for the playoffs, I'd probably want to go at least, I'm going to have three goaltenders, so that's one up. I'm going to carry at least eight defensemen, and I'm going to carry a fifth line. So whatever that roster number, 8 to 50 or to 15, 23 to 26.
It was understanding there would be no math.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
That's 26, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? If your whole mindset is to prep for the playoffs, also for teams, and I think this would be an interesting thing for the NHL, I keep looking at the finances, and I think to myself, if I'm the Pittsburgh Penguins, this is awesome that Jake Gensel's able to come back. Assumption is you're throwing out the salary cap, right? Because that was one of the rules. Was it LA that was the first team to do that, where they brought players back for the playoffs because there was no salary cap?
Right.
And when I look at Gensel returning, you know, some of the moves they made, including the trade with Minnesota, was basically filling that salary cap spot. So what kind of advantage will some teams have going to the playoffs that might have a $90 million payroll? So these are all the discussions you have to have, and this is uncharted water that we're headed into.
Yeah, yeah. So this person that was kind of texting you this information, are these daily discussions that are going on at head office of the NHL?
It's not only head office, it's just the individual teams, and they're trying to, and at least this was kind of the genesis of it, was trying to get what is your feeling for most teams, including the non-playoff teams, of wanting to come back and play. And I've seen some people say, well, maybe you go to 75 games, you try to level it out. That's the part you would wonder if you're the Ottawa Senators. For the non-playoff teams, then how do you designate whether they're home or away games and who they're against? How do you kind of balance that? Do you want to bring your athletes back and just have them play four games and then tell them to go home for another 3 months?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so as it sits right now, the teams would like to finish off the regular season, try to get that revenue in, and then start up a playoff and see what a timeline is to start the following season.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious where the salary cap goes. And this is part of back to 0405. If I've got money on the book and I know at the end of the year that the salary cap or the HRR is going to go down to $60 million from $80 million, how will the NHL handle that as far as salary cap hits to actually dollars that the players are probably projected to actually make? Because a lot of guys are obviously going to take a hit financially.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a huge issue, and one of the major ones we'll have to keep an eye on as we kind of go through this. So we'll wait and see. Again, we're month by month / week by week / day by day / hour by hour on how all this stuff is evolving and changing. All right, 7:46. I mentioned the NHLPA put out a player poll yesterday. So this is not a poll that they put out since everything went, as we've been saying, on pause 3 weeks ago. This is players are surveyed throughout the season, apparently, and over 500 answered this player poll as to, you know, and everything. We'll go through it, but, you know, best forward, all that other stuff. Now, not everybody voted, not every player voted on every category. But for the most part, I mean, you're talking about, 700 player odd players in the league. So we're talking pretty close to 75 to 80% of the players at least voted on one of these categories. So that's a pretty good, mathematically pretty good indication of how they're feeling about certain players in the league. So best forward, no surprise, Connor McDavid, 68% of the vote. Sidney Crosby at 15% is second, and Nathan MacKinnon at 6% is third on that. Best defenseman, Victor Hedman, 38% to John Carlson's 21%. This surprised me a little bit. Roman Josi at 9%.
Yeah.
I know not necessarily a lot of people, you know, Nashville's not one of those marquee teams, even though they've been a really good team. But Roman Josi is having an unbelievable year. In fact, a lot of people were saying that if the season had have concluded, that despite the numbers that John Carlson had put up this year, that Roman Josi was probably the best defenseman in the league this year.
Yeah, and also to Josi, it's not like a one-off, and I'm not even going to say with Carlson that it's a one-off, but we would also agree that Carlson's having a great year, right? Like, it's one of those years where everything's going perfect. I think this is also when players talk, and depending who you're talking to, whether it's a defenseman or respecting a defenseman or a forward playing against a guy, is probably just that feeling of a player, hey, when healthy, which Hedman has not been, who is the one player that can kind of control the game? So yeah, I would say a little surprised because, you know, Roman Josi, I guess it's, you know, again, these smaller markets and forever that was kind of the thought with Carlson here in Ottawa. This guy's been a hell of a player for a long time. So that did surprise me as far as the player ranking.
All right, best goaltender, Carey Price.
Yeah, that
42%.
Yeah, and you asked me, did I see the survey? Well, I didn't, but I did see that one. And I've got to admit, that was probably my biggest surprise. I still very respectful of Carey Price as a goaltender, but I no longer feel that it is that clear cut. And I was, if you said to me, we got one game tonight, I want to win a Stanley Cup. If I was to choose a goaltender in the NHL, I'd probably take Rask over Price, but I guess you could probably have, what, a healthy conversation of five or six guys that you'd say, hey, you know what, it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, interesting that Rask doesn't even make the top, well, there's a top four and then the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Price is 42%, then Vasilevsky, 17%, Fleury, 9%, Bobrovsky, 5%,
yeah,
and then other is 27%, which is maybe where Tuukka Rask comes in. And again, to remind everybody, because Bobrovsky's had a very uneven year.
Oh, gosh.
This
yeah.
is a survey that went on throughout the season, so not just based on what people saw up till March the 12th when we went on pause, but probably some of these guys answered right at the start of the year when everybody thought Bobrovsky was going to have a monster year with Florida.
Yeah, and even to Binnington. I know there's a carryover. He's going to probably have to play a little bit longer, but if we were to stop the season or we don't return, would we agree that hands down Connor Hellebuck is going to win the Vezina Trophy?
He should, based on his stats, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, some of the other neat ones. I found this one, and again, we're talking about changes we may see going forward because I think everything will be on the table eventually. Should the NHL adopt a relaxed game day dress code? And, you know, forever it's all been about, and, you know, go back to the Don Cherry days of watching guys come in suits. It's all been about suit and ties from when you're a seven-year-old playing competitive sports, hockey for the first time, all the way up to NHL. Interesting, 73% of players who responded to this said they would like to see a more relaxed dress code. So I'm not sure if we're talking all the way to what NBA players do, which is, if you want to talk about relaxed, that's relaxed minus 1,000%.
Yeah,
they can
yeah.
pretty much, well, they do. They wear anything and everything. They're branding themselves, really, by the way they dress. Will we ever see that with, you know, the tried and true good old Canadian boy hockey player?
You know what? It is, because I'm not a fan of it at the minor hockey league level. Personally, I actually think it's ridiculous that kids are wearing a shirt and tie to the rink. I like the European mode when it comes to minor hockey, and the kids would all have the same track suits. I like the matching part of it. You'd have an outdoor coat for it, something that's sensible, that's feasible for being in and out of car going to school. And as far as the National Hockey League, this is always the case, and we used to have this even in scouting meetings with the late, great Jack Button. The final thing we talked about every year was dress code, and everybody would complain about having to wear a shirt and tie, and Jack would say, meeting on, let's talk about it. And then he'd say at the end, well, we're gonna have to wear a shirt and tie. It was always a feeling of the one guy could look great in a shirt and tie, the way he wears it, the way he carries himself, and the next guy can look like an absolute bum. And you go over to Europe, and when they go into the games, everybody on the team and the players and the coaches, even on the bench, they got a nice pair of jeans, a real good pair of shoes. They've got a dress shirt that usually has some team logos, and they have a sports coat. And man, do they look sharp. And so I guess to my point, you know, it's just all about presentation and having some pride in the way you dress. And I got to be honest with some of the NFL and NBA guys, I do think it borderlines on embarrassing. That's just my feeling.
Right.
And I think it's really nice for the players personally. It doesn't have to be all dolled up where they all look the same now, but there's something cool about a game day in the routine where, hey, you go do the morning skate, you have your thing, and putting on a little shirt and tie and getting in your car, getting on the bus is just a signal that, hey, tonight's a game. And I'm surprised at the NFL, especially when you're only playing 16 games, that they show a little pride when you're coming to, but that's just my mentality.
Right. Best jersey in the NHL as voted by NHL players. Guesses?
You know what? The Hawks always come up big, so that would be my guess.
Yeah, Hawks is correct. Okay. But 28%, so only a quarter of players, but that was the number, and it was the number one by far. Next at 7%, believe it or not, Vegas.
Yeah.
A lot of people like, a lot of players, or not a lot, 7% isn't a huge amount, the second highest on the list, but that white glove look, and I think just that shade, right, that steel gray that they have. Full marks to whoever kind of came up with the color scheme. And I know the owner there, right, has ties to the U.S. Army.
Yeah.
Because that's the U.S. Army color that they sort of, borrowed.
Well, there was, I think there was some conflict initially, right, as far as some of the logoing and one of the parts of, and I can't remember what core it is of the Army, there was some lawsuit or something going on. I agree with that. And when I watch Vegas, and every team a little different, when you go back to Anaheim coming in, obviously that was Disney and it was fueled by it. But everything Vegas does reminds me of everything the San Jose Sharks did. Everything when the Guns decided to go there, you're kind of like, wow, that's a weird market. Well, they knew what they were doing. And when that San Jose logo, as we all remember, came out, it couldn't be any cooler. And the color, and it feels like Vegas has kind of tapped in a lot of the same things where everything about Vegas right now as far as presentation is absolutely cool.
Yeah. You're right. At the time, for people old enough to remember when San Jose came in and the shark biting the stick and even the teal color was hot.
Unbelievable.
But boy, does it look tired now.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the little triangle behind the shark looks funny, right? Like it just doesn't look. And that was the other part. And this is having gone through some of the jersey stuff in the past when you're redoing colors. It's amazing how presentation of trying to build something can look versus on an athlete. And then the other one that they had, I think they just had the 31 logos of the NHL team. So just a logo. And that was kind of neat to go through. And because to me, I've always liked the Nashville logo. I don't like some of their color schemes and their jerseys at times. But just to look at individual logos and see how powerful that can be as far as your brand itself.
Yeah. A lot of people not real happy, or not big fans of the coloring, though, in Nashville.
Yeah, very much.
The baby diaper yellow, as some have referred to it.
Yeah.
By the way, best jersey. So Chicago, 28%. Vegas, 7%. Actually tied with Toronto. The old Maple Leafs, and I'm guessing it's kind of the new old Maple Leafs, right? Because they changed the logo slightly, look of the leaf, a little more old school. So Toronto and Vegas, and then the New York Rangers come in after that as well. So those are the top four as far as jersey goes. Best ice used to always be Edmonton back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Of course, they've moved to the new rink now. It still gets high marks at 17%, but Montreal, the Bell Center carries the day. 32% of NHL players say that the Bell Center has the best ice in the NHL. Edmonton, Winnipeg, and then, here's the, speaking of crazy, Vegas, believe it or not, at 9%. Wow. Vegas, would be one of the hotter places in terms of temperature for a lot of the hockey season, or much of it, comes in as having some of the best ice in the league, according to the players.
Well, common denominator other than cold is dry. And the other common denominator for all those teams, nobody has an NBA tenant. Not to mean that the buildings aren't busy, but control of it for the ice, not putting the floor down, is huge. And we did have the discussion last week, and I want to make this clear to people. The biggest thing with making ice, or the big thing you run into, is always humidity. When I was in Toronto, they spent millions of dollars, because as Toronto, anyone that's been to the old smoke knows, it's a very humid city. Well, if you've been to Vegas and you've been to Western Canada and some of the other places, low humidity with obviously cooler temperatures, that's the perfect recipe for making ice. So not a real surprise. And also for Vegas as well, when was your building built, right? I mean, that's such a big factor into the technology being used and the control of the building. And just as I said, how many events, and certainly not having the NBA in there helps a lot of those spots.
Yeah, I can't speak to how busy the rink would be in Vegas, but I have to think, right? You're talking about the outside of LA, the entertainment capital of the United States in Vegas. Yeah. They have to be putting in a ton of shows through that rink as well. So they don't have an NBA team.
Yeah,
but I bet you if you looked at a typical month's calendar of what's going on at I think it's the T-Mobile Arena there. Yeah. I would think that'd be one of the busier rinks in the NHL.
Yeah, a lot of competition, but I bet you're 1,000% right. And that was years ago. I was actually at the old building in Edmonton, and I was talking to one of the people that was working there, and I said, man, you guys have the most incredible ice. I said, is that because the building is not that busy? And he said, you know what? We're the second busiest building in North America next to Madison Square Garden, which shocked me. Now, what event that is, what concerts, how you control it. No, it is. But as I said, the big part for them, they're not dealing with the humidity, and you can control that to some extent. And as far as Montreal, that probably just speaks to the pride. And again, a lot of it is the ability to get the humidity out and to control the building as much as possible.
All right. And last but not least, best mascot in a landslide. No surprise, Gritty. 70% of NHL players, according to the Player Association poll, say yeah. Gritty is the best mascot. Coming in second, two-way tie between Nash, which is the Nashville Predators mascot, and Howler. I don't even know who's Howler. Who's Howler with Hammer?
That's the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, okay.
Howler the Coyote.
Really?
Yes.
I don't even have a picture of Howler. Yeah.
Can we agree the worst two? First of all, well, Yuppie can't be voted on because he's actually the Expos, and I love him.
But he's a great mascot.
No, he is Hammer. That's my point. The Calgary one should be put to sleep.
Harvey the Hound?
You want to put him to sleep with the tongue or without the tongue after craving tongue?
Matt T, just pull that right out. Yeah. And this darn Carlton the Bear thing, like, can
that's
you stop?
Ridiculous.
Spartacat, shout out too, does a great job. I think that's a hell of a mascot. But no, the popularity of this, and think back to the launch of Gritty, and I'd love to know behind the scenes, because when that first came out, all of our reaction was, you've got to be kidding.
Yep.
And it was so bad, it was good. And the way they've marketed this guy, the social media use of him has taken this to just incredible levels, right? I mean, this has been sheer marketing genius by the Philadelphia Flyers and whoever came up with Gritty.
Well, it crosses all the platforms, right? When you start getting mentioned, when Gritty starts getting mentioned on the late night, comedian shows, right? The late night talk shows, you know that you've done something right. I will admit, I'll come on the air right now and admit that my tune on Gritty changed in about an hour.
Yeah.
They put it out there and I go, this is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen.
Those eyes, right? You're like, come on.
And then it was like they tweeted out from the picture, went to a video, and it was like, oh my God, this is a home run. This thing is fantastic.
Yeah, so, it really is.
Done a great job with it. All right, we'll take a break. 7:59. We'll get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. And then when we come back, we'll get a little bit more into the player poll with Pierre McGuire, get his thoughts on some of the stuff we just talked about. The news of the day, we're going to talk about some free agent goalies. You know what? This season will end as it ends, but there's a lot of big name goalies that are going to be free agents at the end of this year that will move on to maybe new homes, maybe old homes. What's going to be the implications of a reduced salary cap on some of these guys? So we'll have that discussion with Pierre and get to some of your questions as well as we continue along. It is a Wednesday morning, a nice sunny Wednesday, a little chilly out there. You are listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200.